Little investment advice. Vip Roberts, 1986 rookie car, worth about $275. 20 years from now, who knows? 1,000, 2,000, might even go.
Yo, Vip, man, you were looking at Robin Roberts. It says here your car's worth 4 cents.
Yo, T, 4 cents if it's in excellent condition, but 10 cents if it's totally mint.
Oh, sorry.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another action-packed episode of East to West with Nick and Rob. My name is Rob.
And my name is Nick. Hey, Rob, little investment tip. Vip Roberts, 1986 rookie card, $275. Who knows? Couple years? Could be a grand.
Well, Nick, sorry to tell you this, but my wife and I, we're trying to figure out how to spend the $1.2 million we just made by selling one of my Tom Brady rookie cards.
Wow. The GOAT. Always a good investment.
We've got to answer the bell. Now let's go.
I read your article. There was love, there was hate, there was emotion. I appreciate that.
I went for all the five tastes, senses.
Nick and Rob, E2W.com. Check it out. Brilliant article.
Loved your article, too. I hated you on Wall Street, but I loved your article.
Well, that makes sense, yeah. What are we talking about today, Rob?
We're going to talk about the boom that's going on right now. Sports collectibles.
This is shocking to me. I don't even remember a period of time where, like, you would see articles about celebrities and like these $20,000 boxes of cards people are buying and these crazy one-of-one things that people are pulling out. There is a boon here. You know, The Ringer has posted articles about it. A lot of people writing about it. I am curious about, obviously, your take on it and the impetus of this, but like as sports are dying, like baseball seems to be getting less popular. Where is this boon coming from? What's the genesis?
Well, the boom has come from COVID. People got bored. We're taking their stimulus checks, I guess, and buying baseball cards.
Well, they're intended to stimulate the economy. I think, you know, Donruss, Tops, whatever. Yeah, absolutely. Buy shit. Yep. That's the point.
Well, there's really only three companies, I believe, that sell cards across the board. There's Panini, Tops, and Upper Deck is still kind of hanging around, but I think they only do just sports car racing and hockey.
Really? I used to like the Upper Deck cards with the baseball bat borders.
What happened was is that Tops lost their football license, so they can't make football cards. Panini has the football license, but they can't make licensed baseball cards, but they do make baseball cards.
See, it gets complicated. It's like, I can't use Magneto in my X-Men movie because I'm a different movie studio or whatever.
Right. You got to use, like, you know, Metal Man.
You know, in my youth, just to dive right in, one of the cards that was the most prized possession was that Griffey rookie card, that Upper Deck card.
Nice. And what happened to that card, Nick?
Not here to talk about the past. All right. Well, so drive the bus on this. How do you want to break this down?
Okay. Like my article says, I'm going to break down the article that I wrote, which is on East to West with Nick and Rob's website, which is nickandrobe2w.com. Basically, I'm asking who wants to buy sports cards as an investment because, you know, not everybody's going to have a coffee can or a mattress stuffed with cash hanging around in their house. There's other ways to build up a nest egg.
Not everybody is in the billionaires boys club.
Right. Or related to a, you know, reality TV family and using that money to buy $20,000 cases of cards.
Just like the Kardashians.
No, we're not going to mention their names. So I got started a long time ago. I brought you to card shows with me when I was a dealer at the card shows. And we've gone to card shows where I was the buyer. I always went for people that I like. But if they suck, you know, don't collect too many of those things.
Yeah, all my Scott Cooper rookie cards, it just didn't pan out. But I still love them. I still cherish them.
Scotty C.
He was our lone all-star in one of our worst years of my lifetime anyway.
Well, I had many more awful years of sports than you have. You've lucked out.
I've been lucky. It is a cherished time right now for a Boston sports fan. And as I always say, a Boston sports fan living on the West Coast is so brilliant because not only do I get to watch all the championships, I get to go to dinner afterward, which is amazing.
And we get to just, like, you know, go out and burn cars.
yeah, you guys freak out and then have to go
rally
to work
in the street.
You have to go to work the next day or you call out. Well, I wanted to ask the question because I think for me, sports card collecting and, you know, I like the starting lineups and other stuff, the Lego guys that are the sports action figures and things of that nature. All that stuff is intriguing to me. All that stuff I have scattered about my office here for those watching on News Channel 8. This idea that you collect the people that you like. So at some point when you're spending your own money at people do you like, when is it okay to sell? You know, you're looking for a specific deal when you sort of go outside of that circle and start collecting guys that you don't like necessarily.
When you start out and you want to start collecting, if you do want to go for the individual cards, always remember that they're going to cost pretty much the book price. In the book we talk about, it would be like a Beckett Sports.
The Beckett Sports guide. Yeah, absolutely. Tobin Spirit guide, like Ghostbusters.
Right. It's the only one that's still around. There used to be Tough Stuff. Tough Stuff used to be another one.
I remember that one, yeah.
I believe that Beckett bought Tough Stuff out, and that's why the books are the way they are, because they do take on the Tough Stuff format. But there's so much stuff to collect as far as if you wanted to go with cards. There's the straight basic cards, the straight basic rookie cards. There's autographed rookie cards. There is
the boon in autographed cards is fascinating alone.
Exactly.
When we were younger, that was not something that was very common. You had literally had to go find Scotty Zolak in the back of Roland's to get an autograph. You couldn't just pull one out of a pack. But now you get like pieces of the jersey, pieces of the baseball bat, autographs. This idea that they made it into like a exclusivity thing, like there is one diamond card that's autographed in this box if you buy a box. But then the box went from like $50 to $3,000. That's the problem there.
Right. And the cards that have bats on them and pieces of uniforms and pieces of the field. And
I love some of that stuff.
Yeah, those are relics.
Gotcha.
Okay. Then there's relics with autographs. So you get 2-for-1 on those. And then there's cards that have not one, but 2 or maybe 3 autographs on them. Then there's cards with same amount of autographs with same amount of relic pieces on them. And it just keeps going on and on and on and
that,
on. So
that, you know, I love this card. It's probably not worth that much, but the piece of Pedro's jersey, Manny's jersey, and Nomar's jersey. Yeah, 2003 team, the year before we broke the curse. I love that card. I've always loved that card. That I can see that card from where I sit right now. One of my favorites of all time.
That's a good card to have. I mean, if you're a Pedro fan, there are Pedro fans out there.
Is Pinnacle out of the game? Because Pinnacle was one where I had the Pedro rookie on the Pinnacle side, and I always liked that picture anyway.
Pinnacle's gone. There's lots of companies that are no more.
Donruss? No more Diamond
Donruss,
Kings?
Donruss is still around. Donruss is owned by Panini.
Gotcha. So they consolidated cards. Like the WWE.
Right. That's one of the new cards that does not have a license for baseball, though.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Help us navigate this world, Rob. As it's become more complicated, if you're starting out, how do we navigate here? How do we know what to buy? Obviously, we don't have the cash to go buy a $3,000 box. So what's a good starter set?
Okay, what you should do is, if you really want to start collecting, and when you could do this, because the market right now in retail, there is no cards in Target or Walmart anywhere.
That's crazy, yeah.
If you want to buy Magic the Gathering and all those other weird stuff, you can get those in there. But as far as sports cards go,
I do.
Nothing.
Producer Ryan, Dragon Questicles, absolutely.
Since the COVID hit and production shut down, for some reason, you can still get hobby cards in the hobby store, which is like the baseball card shops.
We're not going to spend a ton of time on it, but legitimately, you remember the comic book store that we spent a lot of time at. I used to love the Marvel cards. And for a while, that market got crazy hot. And if you had like Quicksilver or whatever, that card could be worth like $1,000 or whatever. It got real hot for a while too. So I can imagine this stems out to everything because of COVID, because of shutdowns, boredom. And because, like you said, you can't find them anywhere. So they become more valuable.
Right. The comic book cards, which is not to be confused with an actual comic book, those are known as non-sports. So you have all those and you get the DC comic ones and the Marvel comics and all those. And then you have the independent comic book companies that put out their own cards as well. So you could get like a Spawn 1-of-1 card from back in 1996 from
Spawn. You know, I mean, that lit the world on fire for a little while, as you know. So some of that stuff was unbelievable. Plus, they made some amazing, amazing toys.
Starting off, what I'm going to suggest to do is when and if you can find these, because this would probably be the only thing you would be able to find if you're lucky in a Walmart or a Target or whatever other department stores are out there that are like that type of store, would be to buy complete sets, all set, all ready to go. You get all your rookie cards in there from that set. That's pretty much the way to go. And usually there's like a 1 or 2 extra cards in those, which would be like a insert card that you could get with it.
Where can you go and find a complete set? Like if you wanted Topps 2011 set, that's something that you can purchase altogether? Because it used to be that we would scour through all these different packs and try to construct a set, which can be exhausting and time consuming. consuming and expensive.
But that's the more fun part of the hobby, is busting open packs.
I agree. Yeah, I know you're a pack guy, but I do remember wanting like complete sets, and there was a time there where you could get them here and there. I still have a couple of them. And at least then you're, like you said, you have the entire rookie class of that year.
Don't be confused, people. A lot of the guys that you're looking for in these sets might not be in the actual original set. They would be in something called an update set, which is like the third or fourth printing or series of cards
greedy,
that comes out.
Greedy
in
bastards.
Year.
All my useless, worthless Jamal Mashburn rookie cards too. Could have swore he was going to work out.
No, what about all those Manute Bol cards? You know, where people are there?
Oh, I'm still holding on. You still don't know.
So you can use the necessary places to go to get cards, which would be like eBay. I mean, sometimes on Amazon you can find the complete sets. Sometimes you can still find packs from those years, but be very leery of buying those because
unopened packs.
Sometimes are not always unopened.
That makes sense.
So you have to be very leery of doing that because you're going to be spending a lot of money on one pack of cards from certain years. Like, say you wanted a 2010 Tops and you're trying to get the Mike Trout rookie card out of that. You're going to be spending like $40, $50 a pack just for Tops.
Just for the off chance you're going to get a Trout rookie.
Right. I mean, right now, 2017 Donruss and Score football, because of Patrick Mahomes being in there as a rookie,
right,
is literally like $55 to $75 a pack.
So I know you're strategy as a season collector for some time. For somebody just starting out, would you recommend not necessarily looking backwards, but looking forwards, getting complete sets starting now, 2021 and going forward? So what you have is something that's appreciating over time, because you don't know who the rookies are next year, the Zach Wilsons, or whatever the case may be. This is the kind of thing that like you buy as you go forward, instead of going backwards and try to cherry pick the more expensive stuff that you've already going to lose money on. Basically, it's like a car, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, I would do that. I would go forward and get this year's stuff that's come out. A lot of it's going to be only hobby. And hobby is a different animal than retail. There's different cards in hobby packs, different cards in hobby boxes. Retail usually has special sets that are specific to the actual store it comes out of. You know, because if you buy Topps cards and you were in a Target or a Walmart, they'd have special cards within the boxes that were just from those stores. And they would have different colored borders. And there's subsets and stuff like that. So, like I said, retail are when you go out to Walmart and you go into Target, you say, I want to buy some cards while I'm in here. And then the elite class is where you go to the sports card store. And then you get to deal with other people in there usually. If you're trying to do, like in the old days, you used to have pack wars. And you would open up a box and there'd be like eight people in there. They all throw their money in and then they die, you know, deal out the packs of cards, and then
yeah,
you sit
split,
there.
You split it, and then you divvy them out. And I gotta say, like, one of the absolute joys of sports collectibles, and we have talked about doing a live opening at someday on the pod. We may get to that at some point when the market is clean and we can actually agree on a box to buy. But is that anticipation? It's so priceless. They're the absolute joy of opening packs. Even when you get nothing, it's fun. But when you get that, you find that Trout rookie, you know, you find that Zach Wilson card you're looking for or something. That's when it's like just jump up and down for joy. That kind of stuff is unbelievable. It's unfortunate in some ways that the market makes it more complicated for young kids and people who don't have a lot of money, a lot of expendable income to spend on this stuff. The more people that are involved in this, the more fun it is. And I think fun is more important than the monetary side.
Right. And like I said, you want to buy within your budget. If you're a young kid and you get, say, $20 a week, don't just go and blow the $20 on one pack of cards. Try to build your money up and then go once every 3 months to the card store.
You live in an area where there's still a lot of corner stores. And I think that further you get out west, that is sort of a dying thing as well. It's not that easy for me to go to a gas station or a 7-Eleven or something and walk in there and find sports packs like it used to be. But it used to be 80s, 90s, even early 2000s. That was pretty commonplace. You know, they'd always have a couple of choices for you. And now that's, you know, it's hard to find. Even in Target, you really got to fish around to find that one row where they have some sports collectibles mixed in with the Magic cards and stuff like that. It's a boon, but it's also more difficult to get them, acquire them.
Yeah, it's very difficult to acquire them. I mean, there are other places you go. Walgreens has carts. You got to find them in the store.
I've seen them in there. Yeah, you got to go to the toy aisle, basically, and they're mixed in there here and there. But yeah, you can find any. You can find some good stuff in there, actually. Sneaky.
Yeah, if you really look and see some of the things. I mean, it's going to be a little expensive because they don't know how to price their stuff that they have.
Yeah.
And then there's companies that do what are called repacks. Like the box you see that says 50 cards, and then you can just one special card in there.
We're still doing that, huh? Because I used to like those, and they would always put like a sneaky, somewhat attractive card up at the front. And then you would think, oh, there might be some good stuff in there. And then the next 40 cards are just nobody's.
Yeah, then if you use the light your fireplace.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Basically, what that's called to our millennials that are out there and our Y and X generation, that's clickbait.
Yeah,
back
that
in,
makes sense.
The sports card collecting world. They put the one pretty card, and you're like, oh, look, there's a Mookie Betts, like, third year card in the front that's shiny. I think I want that.
I do want that.
Then you pay $5 for that, and you find out the card's only worth $1.50, and the rest of the stuff in the boxes.
I have all this Kindle now.
I mean, I've gotten boxes like that where I pulled out, like, Troy Aikman rookie cards, thinking, like, oh, this is great. I got a Troy Aikman Topps rookie card, you know, and it's from the traded set. Then you look it up, and it's like, $5. That's all it's worth is $5. And I'm going to ask everybody to listen to these words very carefully. Back in the day, in 88, 89, 90, and 91, the card companies thought it would be a great idea to overproduce cards. And I'm talking about mega overproduce cards. And these cards from these years, while there are a few gems within these packs, but these cards are worthless. They are the ugliest cards out there. Anything from Fleer, Topps, Donruss in this era, avoid at all costs. These are the ones that you want to buy when you see the cards that are the biggins that are out there. These are the ones you want to buy as a solo card. You don't want to waste your money buying these cards.
We recently talked about season one of East to West with Nick and Rob, the Bee Gees documentary, and they talk about how like the disco movement came and how too much of a good thing will always cause backlash, will always cause, you know, the depreciation of basically that music. It doesn't mean it's not valuable. It's that like Magic and Larry came along and the market just boomed, and then Michael Jordan's rookie came, and then they just overproduced a massive amount of stuff, and then they had to kind of reel it back in over time. But yeah, like you said, I'm sure within that time, like obviously the Jordan rookie card in 86, but there's stuff in there that's, there are gems, but ultimately too much stuff there. Even some of the Shaq stuff, right? Is that, that's depreciated over time, correct?
Oh, big time. Back in the day, I had
Penny Hardaway. That was a huge one in my youth also.
Yeah, he was huge, and then he just fizzled off. Back in the day, I had bought some packs of cards, and out of one of the packs, it was Bowman, and I got a Ching Ming Wang rookie card autographed Bowman card. This was like the card to have out of the set. And for a long time, it was going for $600. I mean, for the longest time.
Wow.
I had gone to a card show to sell my stuff. And I sat down and I set up my entire table. And I had like 3 to 4 tables at the time back then with all the cases. And that was displayed then in the front. And I kept looking at the card and I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to get the money for this. And I don't think this guy's going to go very far. But everybody wanted this card. So it booked for like $6. And I'm like, I'm going to sell this card. I want to just dump it. I want to get rid of it. Some guy came by and he actually literally bought me out that day.
He bought your whole set?
He bought everything, pretty much everything I had. He's like, I have a store I'm trying to open up, and I got an online, you know, presence, and I want to buy everything. So I made him a deal, and he was very hesitant to buy that card, and I had it marked at like $350. I ended up saying to him, look, if you want that card and you want to add it to your collection, I'll sell it to you on top of everything else, $200. So I walked out of that card show pretty much like the happiest guy in the world, because I was everybody was coming over to me and buying everything, because I barely had everything everybody wanted. I walked out of that show with like $2,800 to $3,000 in my pocket from that particular show.
Wow.
But I just remember that Ching Ming Wang card. He has a documentary out there on Netflix, which tells you his entire story. And wouldn't you know that he blew his arm out and he was done. And that card dropped like a ton of lead.
All my Dice K Matsuzaka cards didn't work out either.
Right. Well, he's still very popular in Japan. I mean, if you want to break into other markets, right, you can sell your stuff over there.
I'll go. I have no shame.
Along with your old pairs of like, you know, Jordans that you have from back in the 80s.
Grandma Ma's. What are you talking about? I got the Converse. Yeah.
Larry Johnson's.
Near mint condition, Rob. That's a fascinating thing. The shoe collection market is also super fascinating. Let me ask this question, though, because I think, you know, I think about it emotionally, and as a fan of sports, even as a West Coaster, I'm still so loyal to so many of the players I grew up with and have always loved. Is it ever hard for you to let go of something, even if you get a good offer?
Yeah, I have stuff that I kind of refuse to let go of.
It's the Dewey Evans rookie or something that you just don't want to say goodbye to.
Well, there's one that I got from a certain nephew, and he sent it to me on my birthday. It was autographed, which I still have, and I will never sell that.
It's hard, right? Like, again, like, you have to be a fan, I suppose, first, and then a collector second. Is that how it works?
Yeah. I mean, there is stuff I do want to hold on to, and then I'm going to unload it. Tom Brady is one of them. I mean, his rookie cards, I have about, don't get shocked when I say this, about 7,500 Tom Brady cards.
That is insanity.
About a dozen of them are rookies.
Yeah, that's insanity. That's pretty good.
I have right now Patrick Mahomes rookie cards that I have watched tick up. I don't know what's going to happen after the season, but I don't think it's going to matter much. There's other stuff I have out there.
Can I ask this question, Rob? This is always intriguing to me because I think about it almost now as I get older, sort of like the GameStop stock or something like that. Are you watching Patrick Mahomes a year ago and saying, this might be his peak value and it's time to unload, and then you attempt to do that? Or are you sort of just holding and, you know, every once in a while a card show rolls by and somebody makes an offer and you decide then?
I have a weird sense of how I'm going to deal with getting rid of the stuff. You know, you get those gut feelings, and it's like, I have to start getting rid of these and unloading them. And I just have a sixth sense that
I can. So it's kind of like the stock market in that way.
Yeah, it is. It's the stock market without actually all the coke sniffers and, you know.
What about when a guy gets moved? Like, you know, one of our favorite topics ever on East to West with Nick and Rob is Mookie Betts. When he goes and he becomes much more valuable on the West Coast than the East Coast, is that a good time to sell? Is that a good time to go online and try to sell? Or are you holding thinking his career is going to be even better?
You watch the stats. Sometimes that doesn't matter, though, the stats. And that's a big thing. There are guys that it didn't matter.
Itself. When you go back and look at Penny Hardaway, for example, like, I don't know that he was ever quite as good as we wanted him to be. It was more the hype and the commercials and things that sort of go along with it there.
Right. It's all in who you like and who you want. I mean, you could go out there and you could buy, say, a Josh Donaldson card. All right.
Good player.
You love him, but he doesn't sell very well on the market. It's likability. I mean, that's not Derek Jeter walking in the room. He's very hot in the market. A-Rod was very hot in the market when he was with Seattle. Then all of a sudden, he decided that he was going to, you know, sign these weird contracts, and his career and his collectibles took a dip. And then there's certain areas where there's teams like, say, Cincinnati. And we'll just say Cincinnati as a whole, as far as the pro teams there. Not too many collectible people coming out of those areas. Same thing with Colorado. Not a lot of collectible players coming out of those areas because of, you know, baseball, the inflated stats because of the air in the area. You know, you
get nobody a guy believes that, in Nolan Arenado. But now that he goes to St. Louis, does his value go up or does it go down?
There's stars. There's the mega stars, and then there's the semi stars, then there's the regional stars.
So let's ask this question, because I think this is important too, because, you know, this is really one that I care about. When you have something like, you know, Joe Burrow's coming out of a draft, for example, and you know he's going to go number one, but maybe you also know he's not that good. Is that one of those ones where you have to sort of like short sell, like a penny stock, like you go all in on early Joe Burrow and then you turn it real quick early in his career because you know it's not going to end well?
No, Joe Burrow is sneaky. Because Joe Burrow right now is, his collectibles are hot because he got
hurt.
Even
though he basically missed the entire season.
Yeah, because he is the future of that team, believe it or not. You may not think so, but he is. That guy can do some things.
No, I like him too. I like him too. But my thought would be he gets hurt, his value goes down.
Yes and no. It's early in his career. I mean, if he was done, yeah, of course he's done. It's not like he's going to be like from the Colts, Luck. You know,
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I'm done playing.
Andre the Giant Luck. Yeah. we know.
The beard.
Well, so going forward then, a great, you know, I'm sure the listeners have this name on their mind, is the Trevor Lawrence idea. You have Fields, you have Trevor Lawrence. Presumably this is at least both top five, if not both one and two. You know, do you invest in the cheaper one, which might be Fields, and, you know, avoid paying high prices for Trevor Lawrence? I don't even know who's better out of those two, but it seems like the consensus is everybody loves Trevor Lawrence.
Okay. Everybody loves Trevor Lawrence because it's Trevor Lawrence and his golden hair, and he looks like a surfer dude, right?
Thor.
Okay.
Everybody loved Noah Syndergaard. That didn't work out.
I want everybody to listen to me very carefully with this. Trevor Lawrence, in my opinion, because he's coming out of college with 1 year left, is the future Brady Quinn and Johnny Manziel of the NFL.
Wow. Hot takes. Hot takes on E2W. I don't necessarily totally disagree. Maybe that's going a little too far. I was never a big Brady Quinn guy. He played at Notre Dame, so that was one of those things that, like, when's the last time a good Notre Dame quarterback happened? But yeah, maybe you're right about that. Yeah, Joey, yeah. It's been a minute, right? It's been a minute. He obviously won the greatest of all time, but it's been a minute.
Think of it this way for our movie list watchers. Portray Trevor Lawrence as the lead draft pick in the movie Draft Day. That is who I portray Trevor Lawrence as right now. Fields is a sleeper in this.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with that. Even Zach Wilson might be, or Mac Jones, for example, who could end up a Patriot as a possibility there. You know, instinctively, this idea that I'm always looking for the value, the guy that's a little further down the draft, the guy that's a little bit sneakier, that might end up being worth more. Like, I was a big Justin Herbert fan when he came out. You know, invest early on him, and so far, so good there.
Exactly. Very good on him. Jordan Love as well for football. I mean, there's
guys you have to wait on, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many guys out there that are so collectible right now.
All my Jason Stidham merch.
Right. you know what? If you have his autograph on a card, it's worth something.
Not as much as my Scotty Z.
No.
It's a big guy. You know what? He had some good moments, actually.
He is pretty much the best color guy in football right now for a home team.
I am jealous I don't get to listen to him. That's definitely true. I remember looking for a Jerry Remy card years ago because I love Jerry so much on Nessid, but I still do not own a Jerry Remy card.
I can find you a Jerry.
Find me one of those. I don't know why, but I've always wanted one. I got a bunch of Eck, but I don't have any Jerry Remy.
Let me dig through my fireplace.
There's a sale at Penny's.
In all essence, if you're going to start to collect and you want to do this as an investment for your future, if you have the money, please try to go out and get what you like of the players that you like. Being a fan of your personal favorite player is more important than just going out there and just buying everything in sight, thinking you're just going to stock build up this huge war chest of money for the future. Because much like the stock market and much like anything else in life, nothing is guaranteed, okay?
I like your article says, it can be overwhelming. If it's starting to feel like work, you're probably doing it wrong.
Right, exactly. Go with what you love. Do you have any other questions, Nick? You want to know about anything about collectibles from the other side? Like other,
we didn't spend
other
a
things?
Ton of time, and I know we'll do additional episodes on this. We didn't spend a ton of time on it, but you know I have always loved the side collectibles. You know, the starting lineups, the Red Sox Championship Series Monopoly set. These sort of things I love. Now, you know, I don't plan on selling any of that stuff, but what is the value of that stuff also? Stuff that's married to a championship season that's not necessarily a card.
A lot of that is memorabilia, okay? We'll categorize it as that. It's still a collectible. It's memorabilia. It's personal memorabilia. To the biggest Red Sox fan out there, or just the biggest fan of baseball out there, I mean, if you have like a street sign that says Fenway Park on it, I mean, that's part of your personal collection, and that means a lot more to you than it would be to someone else.
Well, I have a program collection that has gone strong. I think I'm only missing one program from a live sporting event that I've been to. So I have a pretty healthy collection of programs from many baseball games and quite a few basketball games, including USA Basketball.
Right. And tickets from particular games.
Oh, yeah. I got every ticket. I got tickets from when I was a wee child.
I have tickets from when they were filming the scene of Drew Barrymore running across Fenway Park outfield and filming it. And Jimmy Fallon sat 8 seats in front of me. So I am actually in, without getting paid for it, the movie Fever Pitch.
one of the greatest films of all time. No question about it.
No, we're going to recast that.
I'm going to make you do Major League at some point. But if I can't make you do that, I'll settle for Fever Pitch.
I told you I do Major League, but it has to be Major League 2. I can't mess with perfection.
We're going to talk about it in recommendations. You know what? Sequels are making a comeback. Maybe sequels are hot again. Stock up.
Sequels, reboots, recasts, whatever. So your starting lineups?
My Golden Girls coaster. I mean, I want to ask about specific stuff like that. Stuff that I really care about. I'm emotionally attached to.
Starting lineups, they don't make them anymore. They haven't made them in years. It doesn't mean super collectible or super expensive and worth a lot of money, but there are certain ones out there.
That 92 are worth... USA Basketball? No?
Not really. Mint condition. They still have to be in the original packaging.
I have original packaging near mint. I would say near mint. Pip Roberts.
That's it.
These things are emotionally important to me, and I like to present them out around the house or whatever. So it's not like I intend to sell them. You mentioned in your article, like, these are heirlooms that maybe you want to pass down over time. So that's part of it, too. You know, there's some equity and there's some money involved there. But really, these things are you're emotionally attached to. And, you know, that's a reason for collecting them. They bring you joy.
Right. And one last note for people that want to collect. If you are looking to go after a certain player, OK, there is a time where this guy's going to have a 20-year plus long career. And at some point during this career, people are going to think he's done. And that's the time to strike. Strike during the time that people are down on a particular player, because I did that for one particular player.
At some point, avocados are going to go into style.
That's right.
And then you're going to get 10 more years.
I went crazy when people said this guy was done, and I just had a weird feeling, and that was after the third one.
We have talked about this a bunch of times, and you're right, after the third one, because remember, there's a gap there for a little while. I think that this is super important for one of the topics that we revisit constantly here on E2W, which is the emotion of certain sports media regions, like Boston, for example. Boston sports media is incredibly reactionary, and the first time they go 11-5 or 10-6, that's over, Brady's done. That might be the best time to invest, especially with someone you know and you believe in, like Tom Brady. Now, he is an oddity. He is definitely an outlier, and it's not like there's a lot of people. More likely than not, the careers end quickly. Like Peyton Manning, maybe we could have got 5 more years. It just didn't happen. You know, Andrew Luck, as you mentioned before, but Tom Brady is clearly an outlier. But maybe there'll be the next one. Maybe Mahomes is the next Tom Brady. Maybe Trevor Lawrence is the next Tom Brady. So look for those sweet spots. And when everybody's overreacting, that's your time to buy your GameStop, you know?
Exactly. Before we go to commercial, cancel culture is at it again, Nick.
No, I can't take any more cancel culture.
Not only is Dr. Seuss being taken off the shelves, so buy Dr. Seuss books right now, people, because this could be a collectible for you now. Pepe Le Pew has now been placed on
I always thought it was okay to make fun of the French. Now we can't do it anymore? All of a sudden we can't do it? That was fair game.
in your opinion, what was Pepe Le Pew? What was he?
He was a skunk.
He's a skunk. But what was he? He was a French what?
He was a French player.
Right. Yeah. Well, apparently some people out there think he's rapey.
The animated skunk is rapey.
I tell you what, you stop resisting me and I will stop resisting you.
All right. Yeah. So he smells hair every once in a while. You know what I mean? Like,
if anything, he was smelling.
So he hits on his interns. You know, I mean, I get it, but he's also an animated skunk.
It's like he was a cartoon governor or anything.
Yeah. It reminds me of most things in cancel culture. And again, I'm very liberal, so it doesn't bother, you know, this stuff, like, I get it. And everybody's allowed to feel how they want to feel. But if you don't want to watch Pepe Le Pew, don't watch Pepe Le Pew. Just fucking change the channel.
Exactly. Don't watch them. This is the world, people. It's just like, you know.
It's just an infinite and ever-expanding universe, Rob, and nothing's going to stop that.
You know what could stop it, though? Something that's going to hold it all down, Nick.
And what's going to do that, Rob?
That's a word from our sponsor.
Anchor.
You know, my uncle had a Ty Cobb tobacco card. Kept that thing behind 6 inches of glass. Mm. Like it was the Mona Lisa or something.
Wow. Ty Cobb. Tell him to keep the lights low.
And we are back.
What are we talking about next, Rob?
Well, Nick, we just talked about collectibles. This is our public service announcement right now for all those people that are ready to start collecting cards. And that's the foods to not eat while collecting your collectibles.
What do we got for the food segment this week, Rob?
Okay.
Plant's cooking good looking.
Eggplant pop.
Jeez, okay.
Nothing for you.
You are about to be crushed by a giant corn.
Tina, come get some ham.
It's made with bits of real panther. So you know it's good.
And café.
probably going to make me throw up in my mouth a little bit.
Steamed mussels with the bread that you dip in the sauce kind of splatters everywhere. That's the one that you go with, right?
Exactly. Get your hands in there and then go touch your Michael Jordan rookie card.
Buffalo wings. I mean, definitely buffalo wings are okay, right? Those were sports.
Buffalo wings are only to be eaten when you're looking at your Josh Allen rookie cards. What I'm going to say is this, is people, don't eat Cheetos with the Cheetle while you're grading your Don Cheadle autographed War Machine relic card. Okay.
This sort of goes hand in hand with our last episode segment of like foods to eat on a date, you know, the easy stuff, the finger foods, all the stuff on Pinterest with like the black olive and the little pickle and the slice of bread, you know, the easy stuff you just grab, toss in your mouth. Because again, as you pointed out in the first segment, mint condition really means something. If I have a little Cheeto on my Mike Trout, that's going to cost me hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
You could have that special Billy Ripken card from back in the day.
The bat knob.
Yeah. Let's just say that, you know, you were eating some chocolate.
That's not a factory defect. That's cocktail sauce.
Exactly. Don't eat trout while looking at Mike Trout.
Oh, we could do a whole segment on this.
Don't eat strawberries when looking at Al Strawberry. Dick Pole.
And make sure your Zoom camera is, you know, high enough.
Dick Pole was a baseball
for everybody,
player.
You know?
Dick Pole was a baseball player, Nick, in the 70s. And in the minor leagues, he played for the Beavers.
You can't make this stuff up. Real life is always stranger than fiction, Uncle Bookie.
Basically, we're going to ask you people to white glove it on certain things. Certain cards desire respect, okay? So you want to white glove it. Just don't white glove it as you're eating spare ribs with covered in barbecue sauce. We're not telling you to keep your hands clean. We're telling you to keep the cards clean.
And there's an important safety issue here with liquids as well, because, you know, it's very enjoyable to have, you know, a can of beer or something when you're opening these cards. You're excited. It's a fun experience, but like you don't want to spill either. So be conscious of that. You know, you don't want a glass of red wine all over your Shohei Ohtani rookie card or whatever.
Exactly. So you're with a friend, right? And you're taking your beer and you start chucking it and they tell a joke.
Exactly.
And what happens when you have a mouthful of beer?
It goes everywhere.
You spray it all over his precious collection of uncovered Tom Brady cards.
I had a friend, and I'll leave the name off the pod, but I remember there was a drink back in the day where, again, we would go to these corner stores and we would get the most exciting looking sort of sugary drink that you could find. And there was a drink for a little while. I think it was called Orbitz, believe it or not. And it had like little bits of sugar things floating in it. And I had my card collection out. My buddy spilt the Orbitz, not only over the card collection, but on my bed. And for like years, there was just little sugar balls all over the place that you would constantly find. It was a rough ride. So don't overcomplicate it. You know, keep it simple, guys.
Orbitz was like the Goldschlager for kids.
Honestly, you would drink that and you could literally fly. I mean, you could seriously take flight.
Right. Back in the day also, we used to have soda called Jolt Cola. Remember that one?
Jolt. Moxie. Moxie tastes like cough syrup. It was pure sugar. It was literally like drinking just like a full cup of sugar.
Actually, I actually do like Moxie, but it has to be ice cold.
It does taste like cough syrup though, doesn't it? It's weird.
It doesn't taste like Goldschlager. I mean, it doesn't taste like, I'm sorry, Jägermeister, because that's...
No, no.
That's the closest thing you can compare Moxie to is Jägermeister.
It's a small tangent. We've talked about it, I think, a little bit on the pod before, but back east, you can get much better birch beers, sarsaparillas, and root beers than you can out west. And I really miss some of that stuff. Like, a good cold birch beer is to die for.
New York Seltzer used to make that, right?
I believe so, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but you can get it at a few places, a few different kinds, but yeah, that was the best one.
When I was in Vegas a couple of years ago, I had not seen New York Seltzer in decades. And I'm walking through to take the tram, and there's a New York Seltzer vending machine standing right in front of me with every single flavor of New York Seltzer.
Including birch beer? No way.
Yes, birch beer was in that too.
I've got to find that. I've got to track that down. That's like Sigma Derby in Vegas. You got to find the mysterious remaining little electric horsies that you can still play.
Used to be able to get New York Seltzer everywhere in Massachusetts, and then it was gone.
I remember like Building 19, you could buy them like by the case, and like even at flea markets and stuff, you could get by the case, but then they sort of just disappeared.
I don't think anybody knows what Building 19 is. Do we need to should tell them what Building 19 is?
That's a deep dive. Let them Google that shit.
Building 19 actually was a good place back in the day to find baseball cards.
I believe it. You could find a bunch of good shit there.
You could find some hidden gems in there, but you'd also find the other stuff I told you about never to buy.
Exactly. Yeah. They also had a cool newsletter. It was very Trader Joe's-y. It was like handwritten and had a bunch of funny like cartoons and shit in there.
Exactly. Now, Building 19 went out of business, but it's been replaced with another place called Ollie's.
Ollie's? That's the East Coast only?
It's East Coast only. And if you look at Ollie's ads, you will see such a similarity in the old Building 19 newsletter to the Ollie's ad. And it's funny, the Ollie's doesn't do as many ads as Building 19 did. I mean, they did them all the time, but they do one for Christmas. And when you get it, it's like back in the day when you used to think the Sears catalog was the cool thing to have.
Oh, it was unbelievable. That was a big deal. Absolutely. I missed that. That was like, how do you figure out your Christmas list? You go through the catalog.
And then it was like the Montgomery Ward stuff.
Oh, Montgomery Ward is another one. Unbelievable stuff. Bradley's was one, if you recall. And there was a lot of cards in Bradley's back in the day, at least.
I used to know a guy that worked in Bradley's when they were around in Quincy, Mass. And he was one of the guys that bought a lot of the stuff off of me because he worked in Bradley's. He would get first pick of whatever came into the store, and they would let him do this. So he would rip open everything in there.
Ethics. You know, we got some issues with ethics.
Lots of guys that worked in places like that used to take a huge advantage of that. By the way, all these places had one thing in common, and it's something you should also never eat, you know, looking at your collectibles. You could get the greasiest, nastiest popcorn fresh brewed in these places as a snack.
I miss that. Now, I know we're in the age of COVID and everything is like hand sanitizer and wash your hands and stay away from everyone. I miss like the hot dog vendor and the popcorn machine at some of these places like we used to have that certainly I grew up with. That is something that's missing. You know, at Target will have like a hot dog cafe type place or whatever. But I miss like the old school, the guy out front or whatever, you know, that's the kind of they give you the popcorn in the cone, in the paper cone, like that kind of stuff is fascinating.
Remember BJ's when they used to have you could get the hot dogs and BJ's at like a buck. It was the best thing you ever had.
We worked some of those hot dog stands back in the day. I mean, that stuff was fun. It was good. You know, it was more of an event thing. Now that everything shifted to online, the idea that you would go to a store and spend a couple hours there just sort of perusing and looking at stuff, getting ideas for Christmas or whatever, putting stuff on layaway, for example, that's something of a bygone era. This is the kind of stuff that I sort of miss, you know?
Oh man, there's so many nostalgic things. It's like collectibles. I'm like, this is like collectibles for your memory. Remember Leechmere's?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
There was Leechmere's and then there was before it became something that you would use to send messages online, social media. It was Tweeter.
Tweeter.
And we used to have the Tweeter Center, which is, you know, in Mansfield, Mass, but it's now known as the Xfinity Center or Great Woods, I believe it was called for a while as well.
It's crazy. Like everything changes, everything sort of stays the same. But I will say, like, with everything with social media and with a lot of these stories, like, it always ends up bad and cynical, something awful. That's what ultimately happens. Like, AOL Instant Messenger starts as just friends being able to connect with each other and turns into creepy shit. Craigslist was like a legitimate site for a while, and then it just takes a hard turn, you know, everything, Facebook, you know what I mean? All of a sudden we're inciting riots, you know, like everything sort of eventually devolves into something awful, unfortunately.
Craigslist, I used to go on there a lot, try to find like the, when people were giving away stuff for free, because you usually find people that are like, I'm cleaning up my basement.
And it was efficient. It was crazy efficient. You found like really good stuff there. I'm moving and I got to get rid of this bed, you know, stuff like that.
I have boxes and boxes of cards. I want to just get rid of them.
It was
first,
a shitty picture, a very brief explanation and a phone number. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you'll never find that again.
Right. And then all of a sudden some schmuck starts killing people because he was the special section of Craigslist.
Now and every time you have a grainy picture and a phone number, it's like a Russian guy.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the Ukraine in some factory, you know what I mean? Propagating misinformation or something. Like everything just gets corrupted, which is a bummer, you know?
One of my buddies, and I'm going to make sure he listens to this episode because this is a funny story because we used to make fun of it all the time. And I actually got him back when I had a special telephone number that I would text from. And you'd think it was somebody else. He used to sell stuff on Craigslist and he would get like, say it was a canoe and he would get emails from someone. He knew it was from like Nigeria or Kenya that the email was coming from. And they would always come back with the same stupid story that they work for Nat Geo and they're out on a ship and they wanted this canoe to buy. And then they'd have the scam where they'd say, oh, you send me a check and I'll send you back this or something like that. Or I'll send you a check for triple the money and then you send me back the change because all I can do is write this or something stupid like that. And I remember I sent him a text about that. I need to buy, you know, your your canoe for the water. I am Nat Geo, and like that. And it took him a while to figure out it was me. I think it took him like a couple of days to figure it out, or he got it after a couple of days and he knew it was me because of the way I worded something in the email where he knew that only I would know this. So he just like read it at first and he'd be like, oh, that son of a bitch. Who is this person trying to scam me now? Then he'd read down the end of the email. He actually knew it was me at that point.
That's crazy. Yeah, this kind of stuff is just, it's unfortunate that we ruin everything as humanity.
You, flock of seagulls. You know why we're here?
Well, we've totally taken this episode off the rails. We went from collectibles to food to nostalgia for your mind to...
What does Uncle Bookie eat when he's opening a box of cards?
I do not eat anything when I'm doing this.
Yeah.
At all. I wash my hands thoroughly, dry them off.
It's always better just keep it clean. You work up an appetite, you go eat after that.
Right. All right, Nick. Do you have any recommendations?
I do have recommendations this week, Rob. And for the first time in a while, I'm going to recommend a food place. Took a chance and I ventured out into the world, and I found myself a beautiful little place here in Las Vegas called The Codfather, thecodfatherlv.com. It is a brilliant, authentic British fish and chips place here in Las Vegas. That is wonderful. It's on the southeast side, and I highly recommend it.
I'll make you a halibut you can't refuse.
I left the gun, but I took the haddock.
It looked fantastic. And I asked you specifically when you bit into that, did it crunch? Because it looked like it had the crust that it's supposed to have.
What's brilliant about it is they serve it like in the paper carton as you're supposed to. And the French fries are unbelievable. The chips are unbelievable. But sitting on top of those amazing French fries is this giant piece of haddock or cod. And it was unbelievable. It's fresh. It's crunchy. The tartar sauce is unbelievable. No fuss, no muss there. They serve it. You sit outside. It's a wonderful experience. They have Mushy Peas. He's a North England guy. So, and it's a great name and a great logo. Look up The Codfather. It's unbelievable. A great place to have lunch, and I highly recommend it.
And that will be in the episode details, folks. I got to ask you this, though. Tartar sauce guy all the way, or do you like malt vinegar?
I do both, actually. I start with the malt vinegar, and I'm the first bites, because I always want to get the true taste of it, I just have a little bit of malt. I cut a piece off, and I get that crunch. But then as I get into the middle of the fish, I start to ease into the tartar sauce. And sometimes I'll dip a French fry in the tartar sauce too. I have no shame.
Those people in France like to dip their French fries in mayonnaise.
And, Royale with cheese. What do you got, Rob?
I got something a little different. I'm going to recommend some songs for everybody.
Oh, all right. Music. Interesting.
I want people to go out and you can get these on
Queen
YouTube.
Queen to be.
That's coming up.
Oh, okay,
that's
coming up. All right. I couldn't wait. I apologize.
Well, and I want them to either go onto YouTube and look these videos up and just give them a listen. Okay. All right. The first one is The Wellerman. Now, you're going to go, what? What the hell is that? It's Nathan Evans. This is a TikTok phenomenon. There is a remix of this. It's a sea shanty.
You a sea shanty. This. Oh, my God. Okay.
This guy brought a sea shanty back, and the video is amazing. It started on TikTok, and then people started remixing it with the original guy in it, and you have to see it. It's called The Wellerman, and it's Nathan Evans. That's the first one. The second one is a song called I Do with Leanne Rimes and Aloe Black.
I haven't seen Leanne Rimes in a while, but I did love her. She was wonderful.
Leanne Rimes was on something we're going to talk about in a future episode. She was on a music show recently. She actually ended up, I think she won the show, if I'm not mistaken.
This and it's the a Masked Singer?
It's the Masked Singer.
And she showed up on that?
She was on that.
Wow.
My third one is called Leave the Door Open. This is by Bruno Mars, Anderson .Paak, and Silk Sonic. Bruno Mars is amazing. And I tell you, if I can get to see this guy live, I want to go see him live. Hopefully I get to see him live when I'm out in Vegas, if he's touring, if we're touring back then. You know.
The Wellerman, I Do, and Leave the Door Open. All right, I took notes.
My last one is by my boy, love this guy, Teddy Swims, who got a huge push on the Kelly Clarkson show. And his new song is called My Bad. The video, he portrays a professional wrestler in it, and he's got a belt in there. So you have to watch the video and you'll see it. And to all of our wrestling fans out there that listen to us that know that we love to talk about wrestling and sometimes
we
still
watch
it.
Let me tell you something, brother.
Got to see this video. It's awesome. What was it? Ryan knows Teddy.
That's right. There was a crossover, a little crossover with TalkingFlick.com. Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's get scared. Yeah.
Shouts.
Yeah, so those are my four recommendations, folks. So give them a listen.
We can't leave today without talking about the hot Coming to America film that was released direct to streaming on Amazon Prime. I know we both saw it very recently. What's your take on Coming to America?
Loved the movie. I didn't love the movie because I thought there was some things that were missing and some other things that could have been done, but a very good sequel to the original. The original can never be duplicated or recast ever because that is just movie gold. But this new one tells the story 30 years in the future.
Nazis are back, but now they dress like Best Buy Geek Squad. I will say, like, there were so many things that should have made this movie terrible. It went from rated R to PG-13. You know, I can't stand that. You know, it's probably 25 years too late, 20 years too late, give or take. Eddie, who had done Dolomite Is My Name, which I highly recommend on Netflix as well. Same director, amazing. Also Craig Brewer. You know, I wouldn't say like he's been quiet for the most part. Dolomite and now this. And you always worry, like, has he lost his fastball? Has he lost his funny a little bit? But I got to tell you, like, not just Eddie, but Arsenio, Leslie Jones. I mean, it's a wonderful cast. They integrate a young cast. It's an interesting story. And even though maybe it's not as funny and not as good as the original, it doesn't have to be. It has a lot of heart. And I think that ultimately, like, a beautiful soundtrack, a little bit of heart, and just to have Eddie back in my life. I mean, I'm so happy to see him. I had such a good time. It's James Earl Jones. They brought back Lisa. I mean, it was just a wonderful experience. I had a wonderful time, a joyous film, and I highly recommend it.
95% of the original cast came back.
Everybody. And really, I gotta say, like, just a very light spoiler, because at the end, and there's so many musical numbers in this film, and stay through the credits, obviously, some wonderful stuff is in there. But at the end, when they're like, who's it gonna be? Who's it gonna be? And I'm like, I don't know. Who's it gonna be? Is it gonna be Snoop? Is it gonna be Jay-Z? And then Sexual Chocolate shows up.
Sexual Chocolate.
And it was just like, I almost wanted to jump out of my seat. And again, like, to have that kind of joy at home with something that's a streaming event is so rare. So obviously, I highly recommend it. It was such a good time.
What was that guy's name again?
Sexual Chocolate!
That boy good, that boy good. The barbershop guys are back. Well, obviously, you know that two of them are Arsenio and Eddie.
It's actually such an amazing cast of, like, Tracy Morgan, Kiki Lane, Wesley Snipes is just friggin' hilarious, just dancing around.
Morgan Freeman, everybody said if they want their soundtrack narrated by someone, you get it narrated by Morgan Freeman. Well, he narrated The King.
It's unbelievable. Trevor Noah, Louis Anderson, just out of nowhere, just shows up for a minute there. It's just like, what's going on here? They had a good time making it, and I think that carries over into what you watch in the movie.
Okay, and the thing where they put the toppings on the top, we put the toppings on the bottom. What was that thing called? McSlurry?
McFlurry. It's nothing like the McFlurry.
Mr. McDowell is back.
Yeah, McDowell. And they all look great. By the way, they all look amazing, you know? Follow the Thunderbird, you know? The shit was pretty amazing.
A great movie. And my boy was in the movie, too. Dikembe Mutombo.
Mutombo. Again, just randomly, just for a moment. But he crushes that one moment, you know? It's unbelievable stuff.
Lots of people in this movie that had smaller parts are all on the music and dance scene as well. Wesley Snipes' son, what was he? General Izzy? Izzy Inman?
Yeah, General Izzy, yeah. Next Doria.
That was great. Next Doria.
And even Jermaine Fowler, like, you would think, like, integrating sort of the subplot with the younger cast would be bad, but actually it was wonderful. Tiana Taylor plays Wesley Snipes' daughter. It's just a really cool cast with Kiki Lane as Mika in it. Again, it's overstuffed in a way that obviously it's not as good as the first one because it's not so clean. The narrative's not so clean, but the heart makes up for whatever the overstuffing is, you know?
And it's kind of funny because, you know, it's Zamunda, but the prince gets his hair done by the woman that, well, we won't spoil anything.
Yeah,
but he gets his hair done by the royal barber, and she makes him look like he's Michael B. Jordan from, you know,
Black Panther.
Wakanda.
Yeah. Wakanda forever. Yeah. It's actually so meta and wink wink, but not in a way that's in your face. At one point, Eddie just looks right at the camera and just looks right at you. And he's like, yeah, this is happening. I can't believe it either. You know, and then we just carry on.
So many cameos, so many special cameos we're not going to talk about. All we can say is you have to watch the credits too.
Absolutely. Stay through the credits. You won't regret it.
Let's just hope if they do Coming to America 3 and it's the grandkids that they don't replace Wesley Snipes or Omar Epps. Anything else, Nick?
Plugs this week, talkingflick.com. We have a French film last week. We're closing out WandaVision next week, so hit us up there. Realwatchability.com, top 10 movies of the year, top 10 movies of all time, and hit me up at Twitter @realwatch. watch.
Okay, my plug is locally for everybody that collects cards, and this is my favorite card shop. It's called Bleachers Sports Cards, and it's in Abington, Mass, Route 18. It's 988 Bedford Street. You can Google them. The website, however, is not what you think it is, so don't click on the website unless you actually want to buy real bleachers.
People will come, Ray.
But this is my spot. I always say that everybody has a lucky store. That's my lucky store. It's one of the best ones around. That's all.
That's it. I just want to say, for the fans out there, the number one player in ESPN-rated fantasy. You want to know who it is?
Is it?
You can bet on him.
Is it you?
Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is the number one player rated in fantasy.
Just watch out for the lasers from the sky.
Rob, before we go, let's plug the articles on the NickandRobE2W.com website.
Oh, that's right. NickandRobE2W.com. That's Nick and Rob, E, the number 2W.com. Same as our Twitter handle. I have an article on there about collecting baseball cards, football cards, just basically collecting, and some pointers and tips.
I actually found that article fascinating. It was a lovely, only a 3-minute read, real easy, and there was a lot of insight in there. I was surprised that you went the direction that you did. And my article is Bad News Bears Breaking Protocol, and that is the 2021 season predictions. So enjoy that, folks.
Let's see what happens, folks. This is documented that these are Nick's predictions. Let's see how close he comes to this happening. Are we going to get baseball? Are we going to?
I mean, baseball is terribly managed, Rob. You know that. Will say this. If they let fans in, I will be there. I will be in San Diego for a game. There's no question about it.
Well, if you are, it's going to be the same amount of attendance I normally have anyway. Nick, it's been real. It's been fun. And this episode's been real fun.
Thank you for all your insight this week, Uncle Bookie. I'm going to go out and open a pack of Donruss.
All right. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to make some adjustments to those predictions and make sure that every team that wins is the Yomiuri Giants.
Dick Pohl and the Beavers.
All right, everybody. Peace.
Queen to be. Lasers from space cause fires. Okay, I got it.